Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, and welcome to For Men About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izett.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey through all things fermented.
We are archived on HeritageRadioNetwork.org, of course, but also on iTunes and Stitcher. Mary, what's going on in the world?
Well, first of all...
Locally.
This is not so local, but a few weeks ago we had the South Yeast guys on, and they have started their... official Kickstarter campaign. It's through ClemsonIdeas.com. So you can probably Google it, but it's ClemsonIdeas.com/campaigns/South Yeast and then a dash labs. And they have some great prizes and are looking to get a lot of backers. So if you haven't listened to that show, I strongly suggest. They're great guys. They're doing. They're going to open a fantastic yeast company. I can't wait to get some hands on their yeast.
A lot of funky and interesting stuff.
Yep.
And scary pictures to boot of funky and interesting stuff.
Only scary to you, Kuzma.
I know. I hate pellicles. But I like the outcome.
What else is going on?
New York Craft Beer Week, or New York City Beer Week, excuse me. It has changed names to New York City Beer Week from New York Craft Beer Week of yesteryears. It is happening on February 21st to March 2nd. And there's lots of really awesome things happening. You will hear me plug this over and over until it happens. We're talking about 2014 here. And February 21st is our opening party, and it will be at Vanderbilt Hall as part of Grand Central Station. We're going to have a really, really great time. I actually just booked the music the other day, or some of the music. The Xyla Folks, which is this giant blue monster and pink gorilla bass player. They make awesome music. Like, they're killing, but they're in these crazy outfits. It's really fun. And also, on that first Sunday, I'll be hosting a cask festival at 508 Gastro Brewery called Cask-a-Lot. And I've invited all the New York City Brewers Guild members to join me there, and a couple affiliates, like my alma mater, Wandering Star Brewing Company, will be doing some stuff. I'm really excited about it.
I keep referring to it as Sir Cask-a-Lot.
Sir Cask-a-Lot. That was my old nickname, Sir Cask-a-Lot. Still rolling with it. What do you think? Mary's giving me a funny look on that.
I want to ask you about Homebrew Alley.
Oh, yeah. Homebrew Alley. Homebrew Alley, now in its eighth year, is happening on February 7th and 8th. For more information about how to enter, the deadline is January 31st. Go to homebrewalley.com. We still need stewards. We still have room for entries. And there are several prizes, a lot of great prizes, a lot of great feedback. Among them is Brewer's Choice, which will be... basically, a brewer from Six Point Brewing Company will come and decide their favorite beer, and they will brew it, a 15-barrel batch, at their facility here in Red Hook, and invite you to join in. It's a national competition, so I'm not sure everybody can make it, but thankfully, up until now, the winners of that choice have been local and able to make the brew date, which is very cool. Homebrewalley.com. Come help us if you are interested in what's behind the scenes on a... homebrew competition. Stewarding, judging, tasting, helping.
There's been some learning. Good stuff.
Lots of good stuff.
And there's a big party afterwards?
Giant party afterwards. It's held at Alewife, Queens, Long Island City on 51st Street, just around the corner from Vernon. One stop into Long Island City off of the 7 train on Saturday the 8th around 7:30. There will be a great big party, and we will announce the winners and deliver prizes and all sorts of fun stuff.
So, you might have heard that other voice that we haven't identified yet. Guess who it is? Woo. Heather McReynolds, brewer at Six Point.
Thank you.
Speaking of Six Point.
Yep.
Honored to be here with the first couple of New York City beer.
today's show is the Salt and Pepper Show. Mary and I have wanted to do this show for a very long time, but actually I think it might have been in our little kind of draft of what we kind of saw happening for Ferment About It when we proposed this to Heritage Radio. But we're just getting to it now. Episode, what, 57, 56?
Something like that.
So why salt and pepper, Mary?
Well, because there are so many interesting beers that you can brew with both salt and pepper. Now, we're not talking brewing salts that you use to emulate a particular style, like a Burton Ale or something, mm-hmm. but we're talking about actually brewing with salt and some of the styles that work well for that. And then again, peppercorns. Actually, when I first started brewing with peppercorns, I didn't actually know the different types. So we're going to talk about the different types and then, you know, some of the things that we have brewed with them, as well as some of the beers that we've had brewed with both salt and pepper. And
where should we start? Salt or pepper?
Oh, let's go for salt.
All right. We're going with salt.
So when you think a salt beer, what do you guys think of?
Well, we are kind of, okay.
To the general public, it probably sounds like salt water.
Right.
It probably sounds like...
Some of them do have salt water.
Yeah.
But to the general public, but to us, we know, I mean, we're a little familiar with the style, so we're thinking Gosa.
Yep.
Yeah,
generally.
That's absolutely, yeah, that's the first thing that comes to my mind is a Gosa.
Which is the new Saison.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Heather, you just brewed a Gosa at 6 point, it was last year, correct?
It was last year, so we do the Mad Scientist Series beers, where every other month we come out with this crazy new idea for whatever the crap we feel like making. Sometimes it's an old historical style. Recently, too, we teamed up with the Jam Stand, these Brooklyn jam producers. They make this really cool raspberry jalapeno jam, so we use that in a Belgian ale. But, I mean, we have done a Gosa, we've done a Lichtenhainer, we've done a Grätzer, we've done a Grootbeer, we've done a Braggot. It's half the fun for me is doing the research on these styles and digging around and figuring out, okay, well, you know, obviously, you know, the most recent one that came out, for example, it just launched now, the Brunswick Moom. When we were looking it up, it turns out that the beer was brewed to a very, very high alcohol, then put in casks for over a year, and a raw egg was added to the casks.
Oh, nice.
So we just kind of said, well, we'll skip that one. We'll omit that.
What do you think the point of the raw egg was?
We talked about it, and I'm thinking that because the egg was put in whole. So
not cracked.
Not cracked.
Interesting.
So maybe some yeast or bacteria or something on the shell that would carbonate the beer a little bit. I don't know.
Did they
Good
wash
luck.
The egg? Just like a freshly laid egg?
They didn't specify. Oh, yeah, maybe it does something else if it comes directly from the hen. I don't know what... directly from the hen.
Maybe the hen just kind of sat on the barrel for a year.
Maybe, I don't...
So you did a lot of research, or you do research on these things. So what is a Gosa?
So the Gosa is an old German style of beer. It's actually served in these really cool, I'm making the I'm trying to do it with my hands, but I realize that you can't see me right now. So the bottom is kind of bulb shaped, and they're served in these bulb shaped glasses that it's really, really skinny on top. And then the yeast naturally forms a plug on top, which is, it's really interesting. But the town they were brewed in had really strong salty water, and it turned out it worked really well with the ingredients they were using. And there's as of a couple years ago, there was only a couple production breweries that are actually making this beer, but because I say it's gonna be the new Saison, there's a couple more that are doing it now. I think there's a brewery out in California that's canning one. I know I've seen
in Westbrook, South Carolina. Yeah, Westbrook in South Carolina.
Oh, South Carolina. Yeah. David goes in a can, which I need to get my hands on.
It's delicious.
But yeah, so we did this last year, and let me get my notes here. But yeah, you know, lots of wheat, lots of Pilsen malt, and then putting the sea salt in the kettle, which was so nerve-wracking. We ended up adding a pound and a half of sea salt right at the end of the boil, and it's like, I hope we're not screwing this beer up.
But and how big a kettle are you guys have?
Well, we boil about 20 barrels, and then like Kuzma said, with Homebrew Rally, you know, we end up with 15 barrels of finished product. Mm-hmm. But yeah, still, well, every Mad Scientist beer is like that, though. It's kind of like, well, let's. I hope this works,
and I think it pretty much does.
Everybody
has that trepidation with things that we don't know.
Especially a pound and a half. Again, I'm showing with my hands how, but it was a big bowl, a pound and a half of sea salt. It's like, oh my gosh, we're either going to make this awesome or really bad.
And for those of you who haven't had Ghost out there, what ends up with this kind of salty, blonde, sometimes it's slightly tart beer, mm-hmm. is that it's actually very refreshing.
It's so refreshing.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite summer drinks.
We ended up coming out with it, I believe, like last... Oh, shoot. It must have been like November or October of 2012. So it's been a little while. But it was... I kind of wish we had brought it out in the summer. Because it turned out it was a great summer beer. And it was interesting, too. I noticed it changed a little over time. And I was picking up on these really delicate changes in the flavor. Really cool, too, if anybody tries to experiment. And, you know, I would say don't drink it all at once. Let it hang out for a little while and see what happens.
I think, and we didn't mention that it also is usually made with coriander.
Did
yours go with coriander?
Yes, sorry. I omitted that, too. But, yes, we used about a half a pound of coriander, too.
And to me, that's one of the fun parts about these beers is that the way the salt dances with the coriander, which dances with the sour, because these are generally soured.
Yeah.
And it makes sense that, you know, over time, that coriander is going to just kind of fade away. Herbs will not always be as pungent as they are in the front. So I made a Ghost recently at 508.
Ooh.
And instead of using just straight salt, we actually used some salt water that I got on a sailing trip in California. and so the hardest part about doing this was kind of figuring out exactly how much salt, sea salt I had actually in the water. And
yeah.
I just kind of averaged what I read, which was about 4 ounces, 4 to 5 ounces is in a gallon of seawater. So I threw that in at the end of the boil, and I'm biting my nails,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
like, oh, you know, plankton, all this stuff. You know. But that all died and fell out, and we boiled for pretty strongly. But that was a lot of fun with that, and the salinity kind of came out a lot.
Yeah.
Did you guys sour? How did you sour yours?
We didn't sour it. No, we relied on the a little bit of acid malt for the tartness.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is a great way to go, especially if somebody doesn't want to bother with using lactobacillus or kettle souring or something like that. Yeah.
And I feel like it was a great balance.
Yeah. And I think that's the other thing is that this is a great style because you can really choose how you want it. Some people like a tartar beer, you know, a tartar, more salty beer, and some people might like a less tart, less salty beer. So you can definitely mix it up. And then we, just before we came on air, Heather and I were discussing other kind of variations. And you said you had a friend who added rosemary.
Well, we actually do this blend. I'm going to go ahead and plug Beer for Beasts.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
It's a blend we do every year to support the New York City Humane Society. Tons of fun for us because we're, as brewers too, everybody who works for us comes up with an idea for a beer, and it's our challenge to make that happen. And sometimes they're really crazy. Sometimes they're a little more in line. For instance, Frank, one of our office guys, really, really liked the Goza. And he said, this might be really good with some rosemary in it. He said, can we do this, but with rosemary? I said, yeah, that sounds easy and it sounds delicious. So yes, let's definitely do that. And it was. Unfortunately, we only did 20 gallons of it because it was for Beer for Beasts. It's a small batch thing. But if you were at Beer for Beasts last year, you got to try some and you knew how amazing it was.
Yeah. And I had a rosemary when I was at Craft Brewers Conference. I had a rosemary Ghost. And I cannot, it seems like it was from a southern brewery, but I cannot remember the name of the brewery. I have to look it up. But that was, excellent. I've seen some other variations. Actually, I was just reading, there was an article by Josh Bernstein a couple years ago in Imbibe Magazine, and Upright Brewing actually makes a, it's Cascade Brewing that I believe makes a different Gosa for every season.
Ooh. That's fun.
Yeah.
Yep. So it says for autumn, he's talking about Ron Gansberg, who's the head brewer. He adds orange peel, nutmeg, and cinnamon instead of the traditional coriander. The stronger holiday version are spiced with cranberry, hibiscus flower, and orange peel. While spring's release is flavored with chamomile, lemon peel, and lavender.
Nice.
Yep.
Sounds fun.
What other salt beers? What other uses of salt in beer?
Oh, well, one we've had recently, actually, a brewer, I think it was Justin Rick at the Brooklyn Brewery with the Worshipful Company of Brewers, did a beer that was inspired by a chocolate-covered pretzel.
Ooh.
So it was a dark beer. Mm-hmm. He added salt, and it was chocolatey and slightly salty and absolutely delicious. And I think that might be the first beer dark beer that I've ever had with salt in it. But,
yeah,
man, it was
one.
Spectacular.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
I just love where brewers get inspiration from,
because
that's kind of the same thing I do too. It's like I have this great food, or I have this, or I see this spice, and it's like, yeah, got to do that, got to make that happen. We all think the same, don't we?
Absolutely, everything is inspiration for that, for sure.
Yeah, Very cool.
We're going to take a quick break, yep. And we'll be back to talk more on salt and get into pepper. Thanks for listening to Ferment About It. On it.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Did you know that pollinators are needed for more than two-thirds of the world's crop species? Most of these pollinators are bees. However, North America's bee population has been steadily declining since the 1990s. Whether you live in the country or the city, you can show your commitment by hosting a hive in your backyard or even on a rooftop. The beekeeping movement is growing, so you're sure to find swarms of folks who can help you find your way. Learn more about the ways you can help be the solution at wholefoodsmarket.com/sharethebuzz. Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're here in the studio with Heather McReynolds from Six Point.
Hello.
And some guy named Duran off mic.
Oh, yeah, that's me.
And we're talking about salt and brewing with salt and pepper. Now, not brewing salt like for a traditional styles, but just actually brewing with...
But for flavor.
Yeah.
How come we don't have any salt and pepper background music here?
Oh, that's right. We should have salt and pepper. That should be, I think,
for next time.
Copyright. BMI. ASCAP. The music we were listening to, by the way, was music from my friend Chris Berry. We went on a tour a while ago, back in 2006. He actually has since moved to Hawaii, but is spending time here in New York and has some shows coming up on the 21st and 22nd of February, which is also Craft Beer Week. So go hang out at the Pacific Standard, then go check out what he's doing at BAM. He's got a big storytelling and world music thing happening. But back to salt and pepper.
Okay, so if you cook with salt and you go to any type of gourmet cooking shop or grocery store or spice store, you'll know that there are a lot of different kinds of salt out there. And it's kind of been a hip thing the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if people are buying all these specialty salts to cook with, it can make a difference in how your beer tastes. So that's something I haven't actually experimented with is different types. I think, I used sea salt when I made my gosa.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Chris used Pacific
sea salt and Pacific salt water.
It would be lots of fun, though. I agree. Yeah, there's some crazy salts out there.
So I have a handy list. Actually, it's on the Whole Foods Market site. And some of this I know about, like the colored salts. I use a lot of Himalayan pink salts for my alternative fermentations, like water kefir and those kind of things. There's also this gorgeous black, like lava salt that I have seen at Kalushians and have not used yet.
What does that do?
I don't know. I think this is talking about sulfurous black salt from India. So it's got to have, you'd have to be very careful, I think, with the style. But definitely go out, if you get a salt variety pack I know Trader Joe's had a salt variety pack for the holidays that I was very tempted to buy and now I regret it. But anyway, go out there and taste some different types of salt and think about the kind of beers that you could use them in.
I think it'd be fun to make a gosa with the smoked sea salt.
Oh, that's exactly what I was going to talk about.
So that you get close to, you get kind of a mix between a Lichtenherr and a... And a gosa kind of thing.
Well, when you mentioned the black lava salt that had a lot of gypsum in it, my first thought was like something with an IPA, if you could balance it right, make a salty kind of IPA or maybe a gosa pale ale hybrid kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that sounds delicious. And then also they're talking about something roasted salt. So this is salt that's been heated over a fire, usually in a container that transfers flavor and aroma to the finished product. It says try Korean bamboo salt, which gets roasted over a pine resin fire in bamboo cylinders plugged at both ends with a yellow clay unique to the region. We love the stuff for sprinkling over roasted or grilled meats and vegetables. So I think that would be delicious in kind of a Marzen style, maybe. Or even a brown, mild, dark mild.
Yeah, I wonder how you bring those flavors out without overpowering them, though.
Yeah, yeah. I think you'd have to be tricky and definitely, maybe err on the lesser side in the kettle.
Yeah.
Because I suspect you could always kind of dry hop with your salt, too. Or do a solution and add it at kegging or bottling even. Hmm. Like a very mild solution, because obviously salt goes a long way.
Yeah.
So that'd be something to try, actually. I wonder if you could you did a standard 5-gallon batch, and when you bottled with, you know, because it would take very little volume of water to dissolve the salt in.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could experiment with multiple types of salts.
Multiple quantities and multiple levels of salt.
Mm. Be interesting. Oh, and then also, Heather.
Also.
You had mentioned Old Bay.
Oh, so back to Beer for Beasts, where we do these crazy, crazy style beers. One of our reps from the Maryland area, wanted to do an Old Bay beer. And I was tasked with writing that recipe. And I wrote the recipe and I said, okay, you know, the style of a pale ale, yeah, you know, something mild in the background, bring out those Old Bay flavors. And I finished writing the recipe and I thought about it. I was like, I looked at the ingredients. Oh, wait, I think I even had to go online to look up the ingredients for Old Bay. They're a little sneaky about that.
I've been asking them, trying to do that too.
And it's like 75% salt. So I just said, well, shoot, that screws up my recipe. So fortunately, I hadn't brewed it with the amount that I originally considered, but I knew I had to cut it back a lot and definitely modify my water profile so that it you know, minimized that saltiness. And the beer still was pretty salty, but I have a very good friend who loves Old Bay, and she loves salt as well, and she might be listening right now. She loved that beer. Yeah. So, yeah, play around with Old Bay, because it's fun, but yeah, when you're buying packaged seasonings like that, look up what's in there so you know what you're working with.
Yeah, exactly. I had an Old Bay Gosa at the National Homebrewers Conference this summer that I was like, oh my God, this might be disgusting. And it was delicious. So I totally want to make one of those.
Yeah.
So let's talk about pepper, or more accurately, peppercorn.
Mm-hmm.
Peppercorn, so I have some some pepper facts.
Pepper facts.
Well, it's the world's most popular spice.
Is that true?
Yeah. And it says black, white, and green peppercorns.
Who did they survey?
Listen. Over time.
Okay.
Black, white, and green peppercorns come from the berries of the pepper plant. It's a vine that's native to India and Indonesia. And then pink peppercorns are actually the fruit of a completely different plant, the Bayes rose plant, which is a small tree native to South America. Also have Szechuan peppercorns, which come from an entirely different plant. It's a type of prickly ash shrub native to northern China. Yep.
Oh, man.
And I've never brewed with Szechuan peppercorns, but I know other people that have. And when you eat them, so I don't know. If you eat Szechuan peppercorns, they numb your tongue.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Please tell me you've been to Mission Chinese.
I've been to Chengdu, China.
Oh, well, there you go. That's probably a little bit more legit.
Back when they were actually banned from the United States for a while until 2006. And
I didn't know.
Oh, I think it was because it might affect the citrus crop. So I think even now when we get Szechuan peppercorns, we're not growing inside. They have to be treated before they come into the country, something like that, so they're not carrying.
I thought maybe they were banning them because it makes your mouth feel like you just ate a 9-volt battery.
That was the rumor I heard at first, was that that it was linked to cancer treating stuff, but I think that was debunked.
Huh.
But it had more to do with our citrus crops.
Interesting, though. Those were not pepper, actually.
Yeah.
So really, white, black, and green are pepper.
Yeah, and here's the weirder thing, which I didn't know until recently. It's actually the white peppercorn that's ripened fully. So it's ripened fully, then the skin is removed, and the berry is dried. Whereas the black peppercorn is picked before it's fully ripe, then dried until it shrivels, and the skin turns black or dark brown. And then the greens are soft, underripe versions, obviously. So I never knew the white peppercorn was the actual ripe one.
I did know that. I found these white peppercorns at work that were gorgeous and still whole, and they smelled great. And I said, I'm going to make a beer with these. And so I looked up all that information, and yeah, I was interesting to learn that stuff.
And they all have slightly different flavors. Obviously, black pepper is the strongest.
Mm-hmm.
The white, I think, is a little more mild. Green peppercorns actually have a very different, almost...
Haven't worked with green. But yeah, I'd imagine. Yeah, definitely different.
For anybody curious about the green, check out the, I forget which episode it is, but we interviewed the guy from Brewer's Art for the green peppercorn triple,
which is
awesome.
Yeah, delicious beer, and it's a really cool process that they use. So what have you guys brewed with, what peppercorn beers do you kind of think of? I know I've had peppercorn porters. And I made a peppercorn saison that I actually got funkified a couple years ago.
That was good.
Yeah, it was pretty good. That's looking. Oh, I think this is a 5 gallon batch. I'm looking at a scan of my old brewing book. We added 2 grams, which is approximately 23 peppercorns, and they were mixed peppercorns that I got at one of the Indian grocery stores in Manhattan. So it was mixed black, white, pink, and green, actually. And I think I picked most, so it was kind of an even mix. Because usually when you buy theirs, there's way more black ones in there. But anyway, so it's a little more even.
Okay. Yeah, I found these white peppercorns at work, and they were lovely. And I kind of had this idea when I started crushing them that they'd be really good with a steak. And so I started thinking about, like, umami flavors and those savory flavors and wanting to kind of emulate that in a beer. So I used a lot of, like, super malty, like, malts, like Maris Otter. I don't have the recipe in front of me. But this really rich brown malt from... can't remember who I got it from now. But yeah, I used those peppercorns, and it was really cool. It took 2 tries. I'm not sure why I did it twice. I did it twice, though. I think we had a lot of time on our hands right after Hurricane Sandy.
Nice.
And did it twice. And yeah, it was interesting. I did kind of get those umami flavors that I was kind of looking for. It was a little fun experiment.
Did you like it overall? I mean, interesting.
It was drinkable. It was one of those beers you have one pint of and then move on to something else. But yeah, it was fun. But I really loved the peppercorns coming out. I had fun brewing with them.
Yeah.
You know, crushing them right before. I would totally recommend that too, by the way.
Yeah,
go ahead, buy whole peppercorns and just crush them right before you use them.
Yeah.
Did you toast them at all just before doing it?
No.
Because there's plenty in black peppercorns. Like that.
Yeah. That might have been a fun idea. I didn't think about toasting them, though.
I've never tried it.
Also, it depends on how much you crush them, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely going to affect how much flavor and aroma that you get in your beer, and then how much you need to use. Also, how fresh they are. I always say this about spices, because, holy cow, there's a difference between spices that you've had in your cabinet for a couple years and fresh ones.
Definitely check them.
Yeah.
I've done peppercorn teas and blended on the backside, like not putting in the last 5 minutes of the boil, but thrown it in at kegging time.
So not an actual tea by itself. But tea for the beer.
Tea for the beer. Tea for blending with the beer. And then my most successful or that my favorite peppercorn beer used Szechuan peppercorns, and it's peppercorn saison. And I kind of went with kind of thinking about lemon pepper chicken, and so I have a lot of like lemon peel and Szechuan peppercorns.
Yeah.
I have everything but the chicken in a saison.
Did you get did that tongue-numbing weird sensation come through?
I had it lighter on that. Yeah. It didn't come through in this beer. It was like more of like kind of like an anise.
Okay.
It just had more of the other flavor. The bouquet definitely had the bouquet of the peppercorn.
Cool.
Yeah, because it has a very... How do you describe Szechuan peppercorns? It's kind of...
It's not the same kind of idea of pepper. Yeah. Like it has the real floral.
Yeah, it's not spicy.
Yeah.
It's real floral.
It's not...
It has a lot more depth to it, I think.
Yeah.
Depending
in a way.
Well, maybe spicy is the wrong word. It tingles your tongue.
It's got kick. It's got kick.
Yeah. I think pink peppercorn, I've had a pink peppercorn pale ale, and I think I've had a pink peppercorn IPA.
Okay. Yeah.
I think those would be fun to, you know.
Another one of the Beer for Beast beers that we did, because that's really where we get to experiment. We did a collaboration with Tyler from Portsmouth Brewery in New Hampshire. And this was his recipe, actually, but a pink peppercorn saison with ginger in it. And that turned out really nicely.
That makes sense.
Those flavors work together really, really well. Very complex, very nice. But yeah, he's really good at what he does, too. If you guys are ever up in New Hampshire, check out his stuff, man. Yeah.
I think one of the keys with pepper is like you were saying before, when you made the umami-ish kind of beer, it was one that you wouldn't have a second pint of necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite quotes actually was from Beer Sessions Radio a couple of weeks back, where my friend Chris Post from Wandering Star, he's like, you know, beer is a long-term relationship. It's not a one-night stand. And so you want those beers that you're going to have like 4 pints of and enjoy it all the way. And when you brew with pepper, there's a lot of danger there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just doing it judiciously. And if you're a home brewer, you have the advantage of doing that, making the teas and putting them on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
If so, that's a good thing to toy with and do. I like having the aroma of black pepper, but not necessarily having that tingle the entire way down.
Mm-hmm.
Having the beer in the mouth feature different things.
And I think a good way to experiment, if you're thinking about using peppercorns in your beer, or even salt, and you want to kind of try the different types, like you have a pale ale that you want to see, hey, how does this work with green peppercorn versus pink versus white? A great way to do that is take your finished homebrew. You want to crush your peppercorns fresh, add them to a French press, then put your homebrew in there, allow it to steep for about 2 to 3 minutes, press it, and taste it. And that's a really good way to at least kind of really visualize on your palate what that peppercorn is going to do to your beer.
Mm-hmm.
And dry
that was actually an idea from Serious Eats.
Dry hopping the peppercorns.
Yeah.
Seems like you would get a decent amount of the aroma without too much pungent flavors or like any bitterness. Kind of like cold brewed coffee.
Right, like your cold, yeah, exactly. But if you're a little bit nervous at first, but you kind of want to see how those flavors play, then go ahead and do it with a finished beer. Even, you know, you can play with it with commercial beer just to get a better idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for men about it. HeritageReadyNever.org.
So Chris and I are, we are leaving for Hong Kong, Vietnam, and Cambodia on Sunday. We will be out of the studio for 2 weeks.
Research and development, of course.
Yes. We are actually going to interview homebrewers and brewers in Hong Kong, and then there is apparently a homebrewing group in Vietnam.
Ho Chi Minh City.
Yep,
so
Ho Chi Minh City.
Over there.
So we will have a pre-taped show for the next 2 weeks, but they're both very good, and we look forward to being back in 2 weeks. A huge thanks to Heather McReynolds from Six Point.
Thank you for being on the show.
Yeah.
Happy fermenting.
Happy fermenting. Ferment about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.